This is Leader ReadyCast, a monthly podcast featuring real-world lessons, best practices, and action-oriented insights for the you're-it moments when you're called upon to lead. Leader ReadyCast is the official podcast of the National Preparedness Leadership Initiative, a joint program of the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health and the Center for Public Leadership at the Harvard John F. Kennedy School of Government. Subscribe to Leader ReadyCast wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Welcome to Leader ReadyCast. Our topic today is resilience, and my guest is Shannon Huffman-Poulsen. Shannon has persevered through personal and professional adversity to develop a deep understanding of what it takes to stay strong through turbulence and change. And we're all experiencing plenty of that right now with the current pandemic, alarming suicide rates among public safety and military personnel, and burnout among that population, as well as professionals in healthcare, public health, and beyond. Shannon calls the ability to persist the grit factor. We're going to talk quite a bit about that today. Now, Shannon Huffman-Poulsen has climbed mountains. She has trekked the Arctic on a personal journey of grief and was among the Army's first Apache attack helicopter pilots. She's a triathlete and has been a corporate executive. She's done it all. She's written three excellent books. The first is the deeply moving North of Hope, A Daughter's Arctic Journey. The second is The Little Book of Grit. And the third, just out, is The Grit Factor: Courage, Resilience, and Leadership in the Most Male-Dominated Organization in the World. In The Grit Factor, Shannon shares her own insights as well as those of many female leaders she interviewed. And I think all three books should be on every leader's bookshelf. Shannon, welcome to the program.
Thanks so much. It's so good to be with you, Eric.
It's really a pleasure. Thank you for making time. Now, I wanted to start by asking you, how did you begin on this journey to understand resilience?
Wow. That's a great question and not one that anybody has asked me in the past, but I would say it probably comes from a number of different experiences growing up. I know that we use the word grit growing up as one of those things to which we should all aspire and to which we should tap into. But the most recent, more formal application really came when a young woman reached out to me who was getting ready to start the Army's flight school down at Fort Rucker, like I had done many years in the past. And she asked me to be her mentor, and I was thrilled to say yes. This was an online officer mentorship program. And then I realized, wow, it's been a number of years since I've worn a uniform. I was one of the first women to fly the Apache in the US Army, so that integration surely is relatively unique. And I wondered, how can I scale the advice that I offer to this young new leader? And then if I do the work to do that, how can I scale the people to whom that advice is available? And that is really the genesis of what ultimately became The Grit Factor, just published this week, and also The Grit Institute with keynotes and leadership journeys as well that correspond very tightly to the learnings of The Grit Factor. But that was really the genesis of a more formal study of grit and resilience.
And I think it also came out of your personal story. I mean, this was something that was not foreign to you for all that you have been through in your own life. Can you speak a little bit about that?
Yeah, for sure. And my first book, North of Hope, certainly is a story of grit, although I didn't think of it quite in that same way. It's a much more personal book than The Grit Factor is, and it's a trip that I took in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge back in 2006. And that trip followed by 1 year, a trip that my father and stepmother had taken when they had been kayaking the Hulahula River and were killed by a grizzly bear while they were in their camp. And so North of Hope is a much more personal journey, and it weaves those two trips together. Really, the Arctic and the landscape is very much a character in the story, as well as other aspects of the journey of grief. And the journey of grief is very much one of grit as well, as anybody who has traveled those roads knows well. So that certainly plays in very, very strongly to this idea of grit and resilience.
And I think that's one of the secrets to resilience is to be able to draw upon your personal history to really understand the difficult times as well as the good times and how that builds into our character.
Absolutely. And you know, if you backed up even further, of course, my time in the military preceded that Arctic journey. And that is certainly the focus of The Grit Factor, is being able to talk about grit and resilience and how that's part of the whole leader and the whole person from the story that that I share with dozens of other leaders that I interviewed in the vanguard of their military field. So we really approach it from the perspective of that military experience, because as many of your listeners will know, that is layered with lots of requirements for grit. And all of the leaders that I interviewed had experiences that reflected that.
Now, resilience is one of those terms that everybody uses, yet I find it means lots of different things to different people. I know my first introduction to the formal study was back in 2008 when I suddenly was asked to help prepare a brief for the National Security Council on what is resilience, and then found there were all kinds of rabbit holes one could go down. There was psychology, there was material science, there was environmental science, there was all sorts of variations. It's a much more a diamond with a lot of facets than a coin with a couple of sides. So I want to know, what does resilience mean to you?
Yeah, and that's such a great point and an important thing to bring up, because I think there are many different ways that we can look at grit and resilience. And as I was reflecting and beginning the work on the grit factor, I was really looking at how can this be most applicable to a young person or even a more seasoned professional who is facing challenge or change. And so that was really the context and the approach that I was coming from. And given that, it occurs to me, and it occurred to me, that grit is often spoken of, or resilience, as this thing that exists out on its own. But in reality, it seemed very clear to me from not only my own experience, but also these interviews with these dozens of other military leaders, these early general officers, you know, other aviators, a submariner, a combat rescue swimmer, an Army Ranger. From all of these interviews and my own experience, it was pretty clear that grit does not stand by itself, that it's really part of the whole person and it is part of this larger ecosystem. And so I have defined grit as a dogged determination in the face of difficult circumstances, again, coming at it from the angle of how do we apply this in our own lives in the face of challenge. Obviously, Angela Duckworth defines it as passion and perseverance towards a long-term goal. So there is something about perseverance and determination that that applies no matter which way you look at it.
Absolutely. Now, our listeners are leaders, and leaders have to think about team resilience as well as their personal resilience. And certainly, I'm sure you had to do that in the military as well.
Absolutely.
So I want to throw out to you a fundamental mental choice that I think leaders need to make, and I want to just get your reaction to it. So I ask you to have to choose between one of two statements. Let me know which one you would choose first.
Okay.
One is, if I fail, my team fails. And number two is, if my team fails, I fail. What do you think?
So you would like me to choose between the two?
Choose between those two. And I know you could get into a long discussion of how interrelated they are. But
sure. Yeah, exactly. There would be nuances there. Absolutely. The second one is the case. If my team fails, I fail. There's no question about that in my mind at all. I think the team's success is the team's success. And a leader's failure hopefully does not reflect on the team, although it often does. And there are those nuances there, right? But the team, I think the leader's opportunity and responsibility, and this is something that I actually focus on in the grit factor, is taking care of your people. And a leader is not a leader unless that leader takes care of his or her people.
Absolutely. No, and I came up with that, forcing that choice, because I know, and I know it's true in the military, and I certainly see it in a lot of when dealing with emergency management or public safety professionals, is that you do get folks who feel like they have to be the superhero and to take everything on their shoulders. And so they become a single point of failure in their minds, yes. which to me is a real limitation as a leader. You've got to create the conditions where everybody succeeds and hopefully they get across the finish line before you do. But it's a very exactly. different mindset. And there is that sort of that superhero mentality baked into a lot of folks. And it's, I think it creates a real vulnerability.
Absolutely. I mean, it's just simply not sustainable. And I think that's something that we have to recognize, whether it's a family relationship or a team relationship. We all have our strengths and we all have our weaknesses, and they should support each other, right? There's no way that you can be flat out all the time and have that be sustainable as a leader. And I certainly saw people try that in the military and fail significantly and badly, and actually senior leaders that would attempt that literally to the point of not sleeping for 36 hours just because they were trying to prove something, and it isn't sustainable, and it does result in failure. So you have to really think of those strengths of the team and how the team can support each other to success.
Now, you now train leaders, you've got your Grit Institute. What's your approach to helping people understand what you're calling grit and how to build it in themselves and those around them?
Yeah, you know, I came up with a framework actually after the Grit Factor went to final edits. And so it was too late to include it in the book. But the Grit Factor is arranged, as the training of going for grit at the Grit Institute is arranged, into three phases. And the first is commit, the second is learn, and the third is launch. And again, this was not something I imposed upon it, but it's really something that started to show itself as I started to synthesize these lessons learned and these stories from these other leaders that I was interviewing over the course of several years, in addition to the research that supported that. So commit, learn, and launch. And I really think of that in this framework that I'm calling the Grit Triad now, that corresponds with going back to understand and shape your past. That doesn't mean change the experiences, but it might mean changing your understanding of those experiences and really connecting to core purpose. That's the past work. And the work of the commit phase. The second phase is learning, and that's really is that team that we were just talking about, really building that team, defining your circle, working on listening first, and then building those building blocks of resilience and grit, because it's absolutely a characteristic, but also a skill that can be developed. So that's being fully engaged in the present. So now we have commit and learn corresponding to your past and engagement in the present. And then that final part of the triad is a outlook towards the future, and that corresponds with the launch. And for the leaders of the Grit Factor, that means authenticity, being able to lead in a way that is true to who you really are, that is also adaptability and the ability to pivot. And also what I like to term audacity. And that audacity is being willing to take on those stretch assignments, being willing to take risks, understanding that failure is not final and that it's not failure that matters. It's what you do with it that counts. So we have this past, present, and future triad, and that's surrounded by what I like to call grounded optimism. We all are, I think, especially in the community that listens to your podcast, very familiar with the anecdote of James Stockdale in Vietnam and the warning against optimism. And so that is really, I think, the Pollyannish optimism, but a grounded optimism and that absolute determination towards that future goal and that future perspective is really critical to success. And so that triad surrounded by grounded optimism in the whole leader, that whole person concept is really what the Grit Institute is all about.
Yeah, I really like that quote from you now. Failure is not final. I think
I believe that's Churchill, so I can't pin it myself. But yes.
Yeah, you and Churchill, you know, it's two leaders of similar stature.
Yeah,
and certainly Churchill had a way with words, but it's true because I think, you know, in so many environments, people think failure is not an option, and I always say failure is always an option. It may not be your first choice, but realizing that you could fail is something you have to accept, and also realize, as you say, that you may fail, but if it's not catastrophic, you need to just get up and keep going.
Yes.
Which is, but we're so that unfortunate maxim, which has been baked into the vocabulary of failure is not an option, I think really hampers people.
It does, but, and you know, it's interesting because that would be a whole nother interesting conversation, because that, of course, is coming from this space shuttle concern, right, where you had really lives that were on the line. And I think in a sense, in the moment, those leaders had to believe that failure was not an option, right? Like, right. We can't accept anything because this is seemingly impossible and we have to push to success. And at the same time, and not admit that it was an option. And no, of course, failure is a possibility. And in fact, in high-risk pursuits, it happens more often than it doesn't. But anyway, that would be a very interesting and nuanced conversation. But you're right. You have to understand that when you take risk, you will fail. And it's what you do with that failure that really matters.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. And I also like your reference to grounded optimism and the Stockdale paradox. And I think that is so useful. And I think the piece of that so often gets forgotten was, yes, Stockdale said you have to be grounded in reality and realize how bad things are and remain optimistic that you'll get through it. And also that you will appreciate the experience. You'll be better off for having gone through the hell of the bad situation you're in to get to the better place.
That's exactly right. And that is something that really comes out in the leader factor in all of their stories, is that it takes grit to get through these really awful times, and those awful times also build grit, right? I mean, doing hard things builds your ability to do hard things.
Absolutely. Now, in the new book, The Grit Factor, you've interviewed a lot of people, and you a really interesting group of female leaders. Which of their insights resonate most with you, and which surprised you the most?
Wow. That is really, that's a great question. And the stories are so varied and so powerful, I think, in so many different ways. I would say the one that surprised me the most, and this actually was part of our conversation as I had the launch event yesterday for The Grit Factor, is that I was aware of the challenges, for sure, of being one of the first women to integrate into combat aviation in the Army. And you know, back in the early 90s, of course, we didn't have the internet like we do now. So we sort of take it for granted now. I literally didn't know the stories of some of these other women leaders that had come before and what they endured in the 70s and 80s, but then going back to the WASPs in World War II, right? Who we're just starting to really understand. These women flew everything in the inventory. They trained the male combat pilots, even though they weren't allowed to fly in combat themselves. And I was really brought up with this idea that women could be nurses or teachers. Right. I mean, even in the 70s, right? And so I think the fact that these women were able to push through such incredibly onerous societal restraints and do these incredible things really was amazing to me. And even now, looking at their experiences from decades before I was even born really gives me strength and puts my own experience in a whole different perspective. So I have to say that was an honor to be able to be exposed to that. And also it's an honor to bring those stories forward, because I think oftentimes women leaders don't tell their stories. We're acculturated to be apparently more modest or more restrained. And sometimes that's held against them. So I'm really grateful that they were willing to share their stories. In terms of one that resonates, gosh, there's so many. One of the stories that I absolutely love is Karen Brash, and she's one of the first women to fly helicopters in the Navy, actually. And we've now connected on a number of different fronts, personally as well as this interview for The Grit Factor. But I love the story that she tells of coming into the Navy, and she describes herself before she goes to OCS as this big-haired Texas sorority girl, you know, but her father had been a Navy pilot, and so she'd certainly been around it for a long time. But she goes to OCS, and she's not an athlete. She doesn't feel ready academically because she's been working full time while she goes to college. And my favorite story that she tells is when she has to be able to get through this obstacle course in order to pass OCS. And there's a wall that she has to get over, and she just cannot get over the wall. And the OCS instructors are absolutely disgusted, and you can imagine what she probably went through. And she and a small group of other women who were going through OCS realized at some point that the concrete wall in their shower was about the same size as the wall on the obstacle course. And so when the other women in the barracks would go to sleep, they would run at this concrete wall until they figured out how to get themselves over it. And I just think that is such a great example of doing what you need to do when you need to do it and until you get it done and whatever that takes. And it's just such a fabulous story. I think it's one that that really sticks with me.
I think that's the one that both resonates and surprises. That is quite a story.
Absolutely.
And it really is good that we're in a time now, increasingly, where these stories can be told in books like yours. I know the New York Times has had a fabulous series of sort of obituaries we didn't run from the past of women, excuse me, people of color. Again, because they're the rich repertoire of stories and so much more to learn.
Absolutely.
From what people have gone through, what they've overcome, the heroism they've displayed.
Yes.
And we're all richer for it. I think it really is, you know, I think every organization out there ought to be cultivating its own story core, sort of
yes.
capturing these stories in some way.
And, you know, that actually is such a good point. One of the things we talk about, and when I talk to companies too about diversity and inclusion, one of the questions you have to ask yourself is, what stories are you telling? And how can you tell stories that relate to every person that you have on your team? Because I just asked the question the other day on social media, just kind of threw it out there, like, who are some leaders that you think of, you know, when you think about leadership? And every single one of them is a white male. And you say, come on, guys, really? That's the best you can do? I mean, you really, if that is the only group that you come up with, you're not you need to really branch out in your awareness. And also in the stories, not that you're just aware of, but those stories that you share. And so that is why this book, The Grit Factor, is put in a way that includes a lot of narrative in addition to the scholarship that supports it and the tactical takeaways, because we learn through story and we connect through story. And so I'm hopeful that those stories will be will really resonate and stay with people.
So I'm going to conclude with the question I'm now concluding all my podcasts with, and we are in very dark and turbulent times, a lot going on in the world. What keeps you hopeful?
What keeps me hopeful? So many things. My faith is a big part of my life, and faith is something that I return to daily. My children and my family keep me hopeful. We live in a place that where we're very connected to wilderness. That keeps me hopeful. I think the incredible things that people do and the heroism that comes out in small ways, but also in the big things and in creations that are related to art or music keeps me hopeful. I think also this story, if you go back and look at history, and that is something that we don't do nearly enough of, we certainly don't do it very well. People have endured so much and they've come out stronger and they've come out better. And I believe in that completely. I believe that we will get through this and we will be stronger for it. And we will have a better sense of purpose and who we are and why we're here and how we can contribute. And I think all of those combined all of those apart are things that give me a great deal of hope. I know we'll get through this. It's just a question of how and when. And I do think we need to think about how it is that we want to write those stories of how it is that we're going to get through it. How do we want to come out? How do we want to be able to say, I got through this pandemic. I got through this huge downturn. What do we want to be our own stories and the stories of our teams and the stories of our communities? And then find a way to contribute to make that happen.
Well, and that's a very upbeat, inspirational way for us to conclude. Shannon Huffman-Poulsen, thank you so much for joining us on Leader ReadyCast. Keep us posted on your journey. I know you've got a lot of good things coming. And listeners, pick up Shannon's latest book, The Grit Factor, Courage, Resilience, and Leadership in the Most Male-Dominated Organization in the World. It'll help you be ready to lead when your it moment arrives. Thank you and stay safe. This has been another episode of Leader ReadyCast from the National Preparedness Leadership Initiative. Subscribe to Leader ReadyCast wherever you get your favorite podcasts and find out more about us at npli.sph.harvard.edu. Follow us on Twitter @HarvardNPLI. Thanks for listening and be ready to lead.